The Morning Show. The home team. No, it's both. It's the crossover.
Crossover! Step back!
Presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. Right here on 960theref.com.
All right, hello once again. The crossover podcast has returned after a brief hiatus, and it is still the crossover. The Morning Show meets the home team. Chris Frame, David Johnston sitting in here. The crossover, 960theref.com. Of course, you can download us, too, on iTunes, and that makes it easy. You subscribe to us, and then when we post a new episode, we just all of a sudden show up on your listening device. We come and we hunt you down.
How easy is that?
Yes. Thanks to our sponsor, Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. And, you know, we were away for about a week or two, but February really is just, it's the doldrums of the sports year, but now things are starting to bubble and boil again. The NCAA tournament will be cranking up in just a little bit.
How can you call a month that has the Super Bowl a terrible month?
And signing day.
Muted signing day.
Although,
by the way, I've gotten where I hate the Super Bowl now, but we don't have to get on that. That's a topic.
Why? Because the Patriots are always in it?
No, just what it's turned into. It's just, I know the game wasn't very good, but it's just like, I don't know. It's just way too much stuff.
Well, and yeah, I mean, everybody then evaluates the halftime act, and, you know, there's so much else around it. I think I'd enjoy it more if the Patriots weren't in it every year, but yeah, it is weird how February does have the Super Bowl, and it's got, you know, National Signing Day, which is
Signing Day light now,
yeah. But you know, Georgia's still got George Pickens, so it was an exciting day for the Dogs. But yeah, other than that, the rest of the month is kind of slow, but things start to pick up now. Spring practices will be going for Georgia in just a couple of weeks. The combine did just end, so we've got now this 2-month draft process to carry out. And with the combine, we could start there with the Georgia guys that were out there and all those early exits from the draft. And it does leave you with two things. One is when you look at the receivers that were there between Mecole, Terry Godwin, and Riley Ridley, it all of a sudden it slaps you like, yeah, I mean, that's a big hole now that Georgia's got to replace.
Ouch.
I mean, have one, you know, one program with three guys at one position like that, I think is rare.
Get lost on just stats. Ridley had this many catches, or Godwin had that many catches, how many yards and touchdowns, but obviously the ball can't go to each of those guys on every play. So at a thing like the combine, then you start finding out some stuff, and then you start realizing it's like, okay, yeah, this is a lot of manpower that Georgia's got to replace. Mecole Hardman did run a very fast 40, although that was kind of expected. A guy like Ridley, he's got his last name going for him because of his brother, so you figure NFL teams will like that. Godwin had a solid, he battled some injuries during his career, how that helps him. But these are three guys that, wouldn't you say they're all kind of in the unknown, but yet the potential for them on the next level is really good.
Yeah, I think what came out of it for the combine, too, was like none of them really seemed to like, oh, yeah, their stock shot up there, and I'm sure there'll be, you know, a lot of people then to think, well, maybe they should have come back to school for another year. And I don't know what they should have done. We'll see. But some of the things that I felt like that you were looking at with Georgia players that they didn't excel at the combine aren't things that were going to change for them if they came back to
like
school
Hartman's
for another
size.
Year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He's what he is physically.
Yeah. His wingspan is what it is. His hand size is what it is. The same thing for Ridley. And, you know, even Isaac Nauta, too. If he didn't go there and exercise well, I don't know how well he was going to go and exercise a year from now if he had come back to school. I thought what was interesting about Nauta is how he acknowledged that he was given the feedback he got from the draft advisory board was to return to school. But
you know, for a lot of these guys, they might get that feedback, but they might have things going on in their, you know, in their life that's just they might not have any choice. I don't know. You know what I mean? We don't know everything that goes into making the decision. Sure, the board can tell them to come back and they'd be better off, you know, coming back for another year. But there are some instances where it's just you got too many people pulling at you. I have no idea what the case was with Isaac, and love to have had him back. There's no question about that. But it's hard when you don't know the background for all these guys. But I always say, The more guys you have leaving after their junior years, more than likely they've been good players throughout their career.
Yeah, and that's the case with all of these with all these guys. And here's one way or another, whether they get picked on Thursday of the draft, which as it stands now, DeAndre Baker is probably the only one who will.
Right.
Or if they get picked sometime Friday, or if they have to wait all the way till Saturday. At some point next year, all those guys are going to be making money to play football.
What do you make of a Holyfield situation where he run, you know, two punters and a kicker ran a faster 40 than he did?
I've
seen him play, he's very good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He ran for 1,000 yards last year. I remember him running over Devin White in the LSU game, which is about the only memorable thing from that game. And I feel like he's going to be one of those where, like, I've gotten to where I believe with the combine that these NFL scouts and GMs, they really don't put a lot of stock in it. They use it to say, like, I think this guy's already good. Okay, my beliefs about him are confirmed because look at what he did in this 40 or the cones or whatever. With Holyfield, maybe they thought, like, yeah, look, this guy ran for 1,000 yards at Georgia. He averaged about 6 yards a carry, and then they see him run so slow at the combine. Maybe they go back and reevaluate it and look at him again.
And they still have their pro day that they get to maybe redeem themselves or get a chance to do something better. But, yeah, like what you're saying, and with Elijah, all right, well, first of all, his last name helps him a lot.
Yeah.
And the fact that we saw him improve tremendously from his freshman year to, you know, what he did this past season. Hard worker. He's, got like his old man. He's got the body fat of a cinder block. I mean, you can tell it's not from lack of effort, but it does jump out at you that it's like, wow, I didn't see that coming. How do the NFL execs and coaches look at that?
So that's one where they're going to go back and they're going to be stunned by it like we all were, and then go and watch film again on him and see, I mean, honestly, like a completely different player. I mean, I know he was never a running back that
you weren't thinking of him with breakaway speed in the first place.
No, but I also didn't think of him as, you know, being slower than punters. I've got a hard time seeing him not getting drafted and not even being able to play and fill some role for some NFL team. But right now, I mean, his stock would definitely have to be one that you'd say is down.
You wonder, too, if these guys got bad advice as to who trained them in these last couple of months. I've been told that's kind of become a racket too, is that these training complexes or people that do this, it's become, you know, it's obviously a very competitive thing to get these guys training with you, but are they sometimes making the best choices on who they train with? And I have no idea. I'm not trying to call out anybody because I don't know any of that stuff. That's just what I've heard from certain people that, there's probably better people that so-and-so could have trained with. Again, I don't know, but it is kind of an interesting thing to think about that from January up until now, that's all they've been doing.
Yeah, it's practicing for the combine.
Yeah,
and then
practicing
Holyfield,
to exercise.
Yeah, and then Holyfield shows up, and it's kind of eye-opening.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, everything you knew about him here in Athens said the opposite. We're using these GPS devices on these guys, and it's like, well, no, he's much faster than that. But to me, it's like all you got to do is go back and put on a few pieces of tape, as they like to say, and I mean, watch him just run over Devin White in that LSU game. And I'd take him at some point.
The eyeball test has to come in to play at some point, right?
I mean, that's how I feel. That's how even I feel about Kyler Murray. You can harp on his size all day, but I watch him. Like, the guy can play.
And he can thank maybe Baker Mayfield, and he can thank Pat Mahomes. Because these guys are kind of trailblazers. If they hadn't had the hot starts to their NFL career that they've had, would teams suddenly be thinking, oh, we're going to take Kyler Murray number one overall? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Yeah.
And it's helped, I guess, that Cliff Kingsbury has shown up
Cliff
with the
Kingsbury,
number one pick.
Yes.
But
and Drew Brees and Russell Wilson. I don't want to say that there aren't others that fit the bill a little bit, but that's where we're headed with the NFL. Instead of teams trying to make these guys fit their system, teams are going to start saying, we're going to make our system fit him.
But I know that conference for years, before it became the Big 12 and was the Big 8, most of those teams ran, you know, the wishbone.
Right.
But prior, like Mahomes and Baker Mayfield are already the two best quarterbacks that conference has ever produced. Like before that, it was arguably like Seneca Wallace or Sage Rosenfels.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Within the last couple of years, you finally seen it with those two guys, and now I think it'll help Kyler Murray out too. The another incident that did happen at the combine is, I guess somebody must have asked a couple of Georgia's players about the Georgia-Florida game being in Jacksonville, because I think all three of them, or three of them at least, I saw. I think Hardman, I saw, had a comment on it. Nauta had thoughts on it, and I believe I think Riley Ridley also had thoughts on it. So somebody must have asked him about it. I don't know that they
didn't just bring it up.
Yeah. And I know that contract is set to expire in, is it 2021?
I believe so.
And
so still a couple of more years.
Yeah. All due respect to those players that were here for 3 years.
Yeah.
I don't care where they think the Georgia-Florida game should be played. It's been played in Jacksonville for like a century.
Since 1933.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll stick with it being played there. Thank you very much. We're already moving the Auburn game out of November. So let's not kick Georgia-Florida out of Jacksonville either.
It is an interesting topic among Georgia fans, though, I will say that, because it's become, I think it used to be, a majority would say Jacksonville. Then you would go, like, if the Dogs were struggling down there, then more people would want to move it. If the Gators were struggling, more people there would on their side would have an opinion about it. I guess now the weird thing is it seems like it's definitely shifted back to Georgia, but there's still a lot of talk about that game going home and home. For us, like for you and I that live in the Athens area, though, Florida coming here every year, that's another great home game for the Dogs. I know it's another recruiting weekend for Georgia, but at the same time, the Army-Navy game, Texas-Oklahoma, Georgia-Florida, those are like the kind of games that make college football what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the great weekends of the year. It's the one of the few games on the schedule you already know. That's kicking off at 3:30, right?
Yes.
And it's on Halloween weekend. Sometimes it's even on Halloween, which spices it up too. You know, you got half the stadium Georgia fans, half the stadium Florida fans.
And as many times as you and I have been down there for that game, it's just there's nothing like it.
No, there isn't.
It's not. Yeah, it's just incredible.
And it's like the last couple of years when Georgia's been on the winning end and to have half that stadium empty out.
Right.
And to be able to just
it's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, and the recruiting thing, if I thought that were a huge deal, I would certainly be a little bit more vocal about it. But Georgia's recruiting right now is rocking and rolling. So not having Florida here every other year has not hurt Georgia's recruiting. The one thing, though, if that game were a home and home, you would have the ability to schedule a little bit different for your non-conference games. So, there are some pluses. I mean, I get it. But to me personally, I just love the fact that it's Georgia, Florida, and Jacksonville.
If I could trust that we would actually use that scheduling
I knew
edge
you're gonna say that.
To schedule a
instead
decent
of Virginia in Atlanta or something
like
that.
Then I might be open to that idea. And I know, you know, Kirby's brought up the recruiting angle too, and that's certainly something that'll resonate with fans, but we're recruiting at a level that we haven't seen. So
although would it be scary to think that if we had one more recruiter that we could take it up another notch? What if you told people that? And I was like, wow, man, this is – I mean, because it's like what it's been right now has been unbelievable.
Well, the other side of that, though, that game being in Jacksonville and Georgia dominating it the last 2 years, did it help us get Carson Beck?
Yeah,
from
that's a good point. And Florida, they get an if we do that, they get an extra home game to recruit too. So there's the downside of that. But, yeah, Carson Beck being from Jacksonville, I'm sure that the Todd Hartley hire, you know, was big as far as that goes. So that was a great, great get for Georgia, especially the way it seemed like it really stung the Gators.
Oh, their fans have been whining ever since then.
Yeah.
We haven't really heard much from Mullen, but I guess they're in that. I don't know if the coaches can even talk about those guys openly or whatever. That might be a violation. But if Carson Beck never plays a down for us, if he ends up in the transfer portal, he's already won me over just on how he spurned the Gators. And this one interview that I read from him, too, that basically, I mean, he hinted that he essentially used Florida as leverage to get an offer from Georgia, which might be the greatest thing I've ever read from a recruit.
Gordon Gekko.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he pretty much flat out said that he used it and made them his favorite to get Georgia to pay him some attention, and we offered him one on a Wednesday, and he was committed that following Sunday.
6'4", 225. I just don't get the feeling, And this is nothing against Dwan Mathis. I'm glad Georgia was able to get him and help a little bit with the bleeding from the Justin Fields situation. But in reality, you had the number one quarterback, the number one overall recruit in Fields' cycle, and you're replacing him with a top 300 guy. I think 295, 296. Still good, but there's a huge difference. I don't know, and I'll be curious to see what Mathis looks like in the G-Day game, but do you feel like he's the next 2 or 3 year starter for Georgia? And it's hard to say right now, but with Beck, just the things I've heard from him and looking at him, that might be more of the angle there. And here's the thing. We joke about the portal. Either Beck or Mathis at some point will be in the portal. Will they not? Because that's what they do now.
Yeah,
you know how many names are in the portal now? According to David Shaw, 2,000.
Wow.
2,000 football players are in the portal, and 200 of them are running backs.
Well, they're not all, most. It seems like quarterbacks are the ones that get all the attention.
Exactly.
But yeah, running back is another position where you know you get to a place, and suddenly the depth chart starts to fill up. And
so the odds are, Beck or Mathis or somebody, they're going to be in the portal at some point.
According to Dave Odom, he doesn't have any players in the Missouri's coach.
Barry Odom.
Barry Odom, yeah. Dave Odom was the old basketball coach. According to Barry Odom, their players aren't even in the portal, but that hadn't stopped a bunch of teams from calling. He even accused Alabama apparently all these schools are still like contacting.
It's like, no, you can't have Kelly Bryant.
Yeah, or
he's ours.
Albert O is the one that I wouldn't mind if he...
I wish he were in the NFL portal.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
That's what I was. If I was Kirby, I'd hire someone just to be hitting refresh on the portal just to see if Albert O's name did pop up in there.
Don't you think the coaches cringe though when people like us start? Yeah, well, he's going to end up in the portal, or that guy's going to end up in the portal. It's like not trying to stir up anything. It's just the odds are and the way things are going. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, look, we've had it. We've already dealt with it, and I think coaches have got to come to accept if they want to sign all the 5 stars that it's going to be a reality for them.
Yep, absolutely.
Spring practice is about to get cranked up. Spring practice has already started in a couple of places. Kentucky, I know for sure, because their offensive coordinator, Eddie Gran, is still claiming that he was offered the Georgia job. We'll talk about that. We'll take a quick break. It's the crossover podcast here on 960theref.com, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. We'll talk Eddie Gran.
They've got a pizza called The Home Team.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what about the morning show?
You need to talk to them about that. I'm not sure The Home Team was named after us, but we'll pretend that it was.
I love it. I love it.
They got the Walter White, too, which is tasty.
Today, by the way, is Brian Cranston's birthday.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, hey, happy birthday.
Happy birthday. I think he's 63, I guess.
Heisenberg.
Yep.
All right, it's the crossover podcast here on 960theref.com.
Friends and family piled around the table, sharing big cheesy slices of pizza, golden baked calzones and strombolis, platefuls of zesty lasagna. It's not Nana's Kitchen in Southern Italy. It's Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. At Fully Loaded, you'll find all these Italian favorites like wings, salads, and hoagies. A full bar and patio, too. Family dinner, date night, or hanging out with friends. Get more out of it at Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in the Manders Crossing Shopping Center off Mars Hill Road in Watkinsville.
Chris Brame, David Johnston with you. It is the Crossover Podcast. We have a return brought to you by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville, the Crossover Podcast here on 960theref.com. Also, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a kind 5-star reviews and raise our profile, and also subscribe, and we'll just show up at your whatever your listening device of choice is whenever we bring you a new episode, which will be each and every week. Spring practice starts for Georgia on the 19th. And so spring break is, we're recording this on Thursday, March the 7th.
Yes.
Spring break is actually next week for Georgia.
Next week is spring break, and then when they get back, so we're basically, the day we're recording this, it's 12 days from today.
Okay.
Yeah.
So spring practice on March 19th. But yeah, Kentucky's already started their spring practice because a couple of days in, Eddie Gran, they were talking with him, And he claims that how hot were the talks between Georgia and he, that they were so hot that Georgia offered him the job, but he loved Lexington so much that he decided to stay there. Of course, he did accept more money from them to stay there. It was that condition.
There's a certain defensive coach that always seems to leverage more money out of things like that.
He
did it again, I know. So is Eddie Grand, Cousin Eddie, is he doing the same thing?
He did, because he did get more money out of Kentucky, but I don't care. I don't believe that that Georgia offered him the job to be its offensive coordinator, replace Jim Chaney, and he decided after with that team losing its best offensive player since
Tim Couch.
Right. You know, Randall Cobb was good.
Randall Cobb, yeah.
But Tim Couch, who was the number one overall pick of the draft. I mean, he would like, oh, yeah, sure. I'm just going to stay here at Kentucky. I don't want to go to Athens.
Yeah. But the funny thing, too, is, I mean, I understand what they were trying to do on offense, but it wasn't like they're blowing you away like that either. So was it, you know, I know you have the style to fit your personnel, and sometimes you got to do what you got to do, but it wasn't to me like a situation where like, Cliff Kingsbury, I know it didn't work at Texas Tech, but we're going to hire him for an NFL coaching position, that kind of thing. So just weird what you see on the outside. Maybe the inside looking out is different, but the outside looking in, it seemed kind of strange.
Yeah, there wasn't like, with Eddie Grant, he's not one of those offensive coaches where you know like you've got some sort of a system that you're inheriting. They did they did fine. They had one of their best players ever, and they used him a lot, and they leaned on him a lot. But yeah, when you looked at Kentucky's offense last year, and I remember poring over it when the Dogs were heading up there to Lexington for what was a huge game. And that was the SEC East was on the line that weekend. And, you know, offensively, they ranked only in like the hundreds.
Yeah.
They really weren't a great offense. And when you looked at their production leading into that game last fall with Georgia, they had escaped at Missouri, where they didn't score an offensive touchdown until the last play of the game, where they
Is putting it mildly, too. Yeah.
And they also, let's be honest,
pass interference.
They committed offensive pass interference on their only touchdown of the game. They I don't think they scored an offensive touchdown in that loss at Texas A&M because they had a defensive score in that one. And so when you looked at it, I'm like, well, their offense is, they've got Benny Snell, and he's putting up numbers, but you know, truthfully, they're not. They're really not that great,
right.
And we ended up shutting them down.
And Snell, I mean, he started to pay the price for all those carries, too.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so it's the little nagging injuries and the number of carries, I mean, your body can only take so much.
And it was the first time we really did a number on him.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he had had good games against us.
Yeah, absolutely.
His first couple years.
But hey, more power to Eddie Grand, right?
Yeah, and I mean, most of the people around here who cover Georgia and, you know, are kind of, you know, in the nuts and bolts of it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time it seemed like Georgia was pretty much primed to just promote from within.
Right.
And other than the Eddie Grand name, I mean, there wasn't even like any other real names that popped up in that search. Like we're talking to this guy or interviewing that guy. All of a sudden it was like Eddie Grand's name popped up there. And then he decides, I'm staying at Kentucky, which Agent Sexton might have had something to do with. I don't know, but you know, it's fine. He wants to make his fans feel like this is where he wanted to be, and Kentucky's great, and Lexington's great, and they're going to start building something there now. But the thing that bugs me about it is it does on a little, some level, it makes Georgia look a little bad, like you've taken a little bit of a knock, like all these guys that had the exodus to the NFL early, Jim Chaney leaves for Tennessee, suddenly Eddie Grand doesn't want to come here, and it builds this narrative. Like, hey, what's going on there? Nobody wants to work or play for Kirby anymore.
Kirby, though, does real well when he's got a little chip on his shoulder. So when Kentucky rolls down here this year, I'm just kind of curious to see how that's going to go.
Yeah, they might not score a lot because they don't have Snell.
I don't expect them to anyway.
Yeah, but they don't have Snell anymore either, which
right.
He was the one guy who really scared you in that offense.
Yeah. And they had a great season, historically great season.
Yeah.
So there's excitement up there. But it's funny how, like, when Georgia goes up there to play them in football, it's like the biggest weekend they've ever had, and the Dogs just snuff them out. Kind of like the Kentucky basketball team. They go on the road so many places, and it's the biggest game of the year for that team, and Kentucky basketball snuffs out the other team.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the way I see it with that rivalry.
And that's how I remembered like making myself feel better that week, Because I was, you know, I was worried. It was from the matchup standpoint, we had struggled. There were teams that ran the ball on us pretty well, and they had Benny Snell. So it was a strength of theirs against, if, you know, not to say it was a weakness, but it'd be the one thing we were weakest at.
Right.
Was defending the run last year. But then that's where I kept thinking, all right, if we were having a great season in basketball and Kentucky rolled down here for a game, like, they would win it. That's just how it is.
It's happened so many times.
And so the opposite ended up being true. It's, they were having a great year in football, but...
And then they got I called it the Georgia hangover, because the next week they end up getting beat by Tennessee.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah. They let us beat them twice. But it was a good year for them. They ended a three-decade losing streak to Florida, and...
They end up, playing in a New Year's Day Bowl.
Yep.
Literally the best season they've had in, 40 years.
Yeah, but they lose a ton now. Yep. I mean, they might have one of the top two or three picks of the draft with Josh Allen.
Yep.
And Snell is gone now, too. So, Eddie Grant wanted to stay up there, and... It's funny. All it'll take is a couple of bad games on offense for their fans to be wishing I sure wish you had taken that job in Athens that you were offered.
They'll be killing him.
Yeah. But Georgia's coaching staff, I guess that's when you're looking at storylines for the spring coming up in a couple of weeks, there's no quarterback derby. Not that there really has been one, but there's no quarterback derby now.
So, won't even be able to manufacture one.
No.
It's Jake Fromm. I think on the subject we've been talking about, though, I think the coaches, the coordinators, I mean, that is a topic of, going to spring, James Coley taking over the offense and Dan Lanning taking over the defense. And, people are like, it doesn't matter what Dan Lanning does. Kirby's the defensive coordinator. And it's like, yeah, but it's not just about what you see on Saturday. You are coordinating the defense. It's what goes into the entire week of getting ready for a game. Kirby is the head coach. Just like when people would say that about Kirby and Saban, it's like, no. I mean,
right.
Saban's he's a good defensive coach. Yes, we know that. But Kirby was the defensive coordinator. And I want to see now how Lanning does as the defensive coordinator, and I want to see how James Coley does as the offensive coordinator.
Kirby's the defensive coordinator till we have a bad game on defense, and then Lanning is the one, because Lanning knows now how Kirby felt in Tuscaloosa. That's all. Saban's the puppet master there, calling all the shots, and then when they couldn't, when they got bludgeoned by Ohio State in the Sugar Bowl, it's like Kirby's terrible.
Exactly. It's like funny the focus shifts differently on the outcome.
But I think it's where the transition is interesting to me is that you went from yet a guy in Mel Tucker was a veteran, had been a defensive coordinator in the NFL, had even briefly been an interim head coach in the NFL with Jacksonville, and obviously Jim Chaney was a veteran that went all the way back to, he was Drew Brees's college offensive coordinator. So you had these two really experienced offensive and defensive coaches, and it's the opposite now, where you've got Coley had called the shots at Miami,
some experience,
but this is Dan Lanning. This
young
is a pretty
guy.
Yeah, what was he like 3 years ago? Wasn't he at Memphis?
Yeah, he was at Memphis, but you know what? If you can coach, you can coach.
Yeah, and recruit
and recruit. That's as huge a deal as anything. And it's funny how you can coach better if you have better players. You ever notice that?
It does work that way.
So that also helps.
Yeah. That's why I've noticed it's the part of the off-season filler is to start coming out with the rankings of who are the best coaches in college football. The top two are obvious, of course, Saban and Sweeney.
Yeah.
But, it's like where Kirby ranks in there, and it's like with some things with Kirby, it's like, the ace recruiter, but there's still some game management stuff, which is all fair. But sometimes when these coaches get knocked for their recruiting, it's like, well, they have to coach there's 12 regular season games. And then if you're lucky, there's maybe 15 up to 15.
Two teams are going to play 15 games.
Right.
Yeah.
So the recruiting is actually, to me, more of it than the game days.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
So,
absolutely. And I guess that was a false statement. I guess Notre Dame couldn't play 15 games. But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, right.
You get what I'm saying. But you're right. Yeah, the recruiting. I mean, it's huge. That's why we get excited about Carson Beck. And Florida fans lose their mind over a guy that probably, 99% of the people had never heard of him before and have never seen a clip on Huddle.
No, but they were convinced, and all the recruiting experts were telling them the 24/7 crystal ball had had Florida at like 90-something percent, and all of a sudden Georgia swoops in there and offers him, and he's committed a couple of days later. All right, thanks a lot for joining us today, the Crossover Podcast here on 960theref.com. Also, again, subscribe to us on iTunes.
By the way, Brown, I'd like to say this before we get out of here. This has been a lot of fun here with you this morning, and I like the concept here because you and I, we work some shows together, but
right.
we don't get to verbally communicate in a forum like this. And love talking Georgia sports, Georgia football. I know the day we're recording this, the basketball team had a bad loss last night with Missouri, but they'll be playing South Carolina this weekend, and I want to get into that because if you're listening to us right now, that game may have already happened, and South Carolina may be getting that double bye, which is just bizarre in to think about where they were before conference play started. But with Georgia baseball, with the spring sports going on, we even have not Georgia, but the Braves and everything. I'm really excited that, this time of year, and I agree with you. If you get through February, you get to March and April and May, we'll have spring football practice. Next thing you know, media days will be rolling around. But it's always fun to talk college football and especially Georgia football.
Yeah, you got the Masters. Another Bulldog won on the PGA Tour a week ago.
Oh, man, Keith Mitchell, that was fantastic.
Yeah, so business is definitely starting to pick up again. And on the subject of that basketball game you mentioned, again, recording this on Thursday from the night before, if there's one silver lining to it,
yeah,
you can now place Georgia firmly in the bad losses column for Florida.
If you couldn't before, you certainly can now.
Now, the Gators lost a heartbreaker to LSU at home.
And they've got Kentucky coming up.
Yeah, but that loss to Georgia at home is going to keep them out of the tournament.
That was a brutal, brutal loss.
Yeah. They're out of the tournament because of that, unless they were on the table next week at the SEC.
By the way, would you say, I know I'm keeping us here a little bit longer, the win over Florida, senior night, and not only was it senior night, half your team senior, so it's very emotional, not having Rayshon Hammonds, I don't want to say a 25-point loss, but should we have seen that coming? What happened?
A loss, but to play I mean, to what they have 13 points at the half, and then went
14 at the half, and they only made 13 baskets the entire game,
and then went to the about 10 minutes into the second half, had 2 points.
Yeah,
I think on 2 free throws. Like, I don't think they had even hit a shot then.
Yeah, it was not a good night.
Yeah, but
we
could firmly place Georgia.
What was the number?
It was 3.5.
Missouri favored?
No.
Oh, Georgia was favored.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So Georgia ended up winning one home game this year in the league, Vandy.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. Only won 2 games.
Yeah, we do know this. Georgia will play at the SEC tournament Wednesday night at 7 o'clock.
Yeah. Probably against Missouri, but I guess it could be A&M, too.
It's one of those two.
Yeah. All right, thanks a lot for tuning in again today. The Crossover Podcast brought to you by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. We'll be back again next week, so just keep refreshing 960theref.com. Again, subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'll just show up on your listening device when we put out another episode.
I'm hungry. I'm going to go get some pizza.
Yeah, well, they have the home team then.
That's right.
For David Johnston of The Morning Show, I'm Chris Brame from the home team. This has been the Crossover Podcast on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville on 960theref.com.